future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Welcome in to the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here with you guys till 2 o'clock today. Joe George here as always. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. Josh Chevy behind the glass as usual on Twitter at IMJ Chevy. And Andrew is out gallivanting in Michigan at a wedding. So I called in the big guns. When I said I needed a fill-in host, I said, what am I going to do? I'm going to get a super athletic person that sprains their ankle in a swimming pool.
That's hurtful, man.
That's Josh Beard. That's a true story, Josh. You are so athletic. You sprained your ankle in a swimming pool the last week. And I was like, I need a real athlete on this show. I need to talk to someone that has bold NFL predictions that we're going to talk about today. Someone thinks that Myles Garrett's going to win Defensive Player of the Year. So I brought in the person that said Myles Garrett's going to be a bust.
I feel like this is a job. I've been jobbed. I feel like that's what's happening. I've been set up today.
Yeah, pretty much. But we got a bunch. You can find him on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio. We're here with you guys till 2 o'clock. Obviously, we have a ton of stuff to get into. The Astros offense sucks. The team is... they're not playing great baseball right now. It's you finally have an opportunity as the Rangers start losing games to the Angels. They lose to the Blue Jays last night, but the Astros lose to the Reds. The offense just can't get it done again. They're 2-2 on the homestand right now against below 500 teams. And not only you're 3.5 back of the Rangers, so that's positive.
Right.
But you're tied with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California, whatever they're called these days. Because they're playing good baseball. Really, like, Shohei Ohtani is carrying that team in a way that only, like, him, Yordan Alvarez, and Aaron Judge can carry baseball teams.
Right.
But the Astros right now, their offense just isn't where it needs to be. It is just, like, the reality of what's going on. And it's hard to feel like panic button, right? Like, where... They're only 3.5 back. You have all these injuries. Like, you haven't had Michael Brantley. You lost Lance McCullers for the whole season. All these things that could go wrong have gone wrong for this team. But, like, they're still right there in the thick of it, but it's not pretty right now.
No. It looked like things were kind of turning around a little bit during the National Series, especially in those first two games. And it's tough to watch because we watch that Toronto series. They lose 3 out of 4. We watched that Cleveland series. They lose 2 out of 3. One in a really, honestly, a heartbreaker 14-inning game, which was freaking so disappointing. But then it looked like with the Nationals, they turned it around. And, you know, Tuesday night, they went 6-1. Wednesday night, I went to that game. By the way, for my birthday, I'm 37. It's not a lack of athleticism that made me sprain my ankle in a pool. I was trying to suplex my son. I slipped on the stairs. I tried to catch myself, and I wrenched my knee, and I'm 37, and so everything broke. Thank you very much. But I went to the Nationals game on Wednesday night, and they won. But it's even that win, even some of these wins, whenever they get close in these games, you have Ryan Pressly come in, and you're like, going to line them up, going to knock them down. And then he just gives all four runs in the inning, and you're like, oh, crap, what's going to happen now? Luckily, there's a crazy play. Bases get loaded, and they went on a walk-off on a bad throw on an error, right? But so they got lucky in that game, but then you watch these last two games, and it's just – they can't find a way to put it all together at the right time. There's a lot of, like, there's so many different moments where it's, like, so close, almost. Last night against the Reds, how many of those balls that we see, how many hit the warning track? It was, like, 2, 3, 4, 5 balls all get to the warning track, and it's just they're so close to getting there. I think the most frustrating part of this for me is that we're running into all of these other problems. Right, we're running into problems with the offense. We're running into problems with injuries. We're running into problems with some bullpen problems, and Jose Abreu is just now starting to figure it out.
It's tough that, and we're going to talk about the deadline a little bit later because it's the math. I think is hard when you talk about adding a bat to this team, because if Jose Abreu, who he was over the last week and a half, all through June, basically, he's been really good. Like, he's been, it really looks like he has turned the corner and is becoming a much better baseball player. And, like, there are a lot of people in Chicago said, who I talked to, like, he's a slow starter. And this year, June is really when he gets going. But typically in May, like, there was more signs of life than we saw this year. So the slow start's not unexpected when you look at his career.
Right.
But he finally gets going. And you get Jose Altuve back. Well, Jose Altuve is 7 for his last 44, hitting .159.
Yep.
Alex Bregman is 6 for 43 in his last 43 at bats. He's hitting .140. And one thing Andrew and I have talked a lot about in this show is that this team is going to be carried or be buried by their corner infielders.
Yes.
That, like, Jose Abreu and Alex Bregman really feel like the two guys that when you look at this lineup and you say, where is the flaws? What are the biggest issues? Or when the team's going great, like, what's working? It's Bregman, Abreu.
Yep.
Like, those guys, like, Altuve will figure it out. Weird offseason, hurt, surgery, whatever. Like, he'll be fine. He's just in a funk right now. But in last night's lineup, you have two guys hitting over .280, Dubon and Tucker. Dubon's out of the lineup today. Corey Jolks, for whatever reason, is leading off. So you have one guy in the lineup hitting above .280, and that's Kyle Tucker. So, like, the offense as a whole is just, it's just not good. And it wasn't great last year. Like, this isn't 2019, 2018, 17, where, like, the Astros' offense was absolutely incredible. We all know that. It's just simple math, especially when you take Yordan Alvarez out of it. But can they figure it out, and can they put it together when they need to?
Right.
It seems like is the issue right now. Like, I think they're going to still make the playoffs. I think there's still a very good chance they win the division. The fact that they're 3.5 games back and they've dealt with what they have so far is incredible.
Yes. And, like, well, and if they this is what I'm looking forward to. And when I was on with Dell a few weeks ago, in on the morning show, I talked about, hey, calm down. You know, they've won a lot of games. They've lost some games. It's okay. Calm down. And I'm not ready to hit that panic button yet. I'm still in that. It's fine. We're in June now. We have some things that are going right with the team. And, like, JP France last night, other than one inning, I thought he looked really, really good. And there are some things that are going right with this team. And one of the biggest things for me is if we could continue to have Jose Abreu and Yiner Diaz and Corey Jolks and Dubon, these extra guys producing when Yordan comes back, Altuve figures it out and comes around, and then, like you said, Bregman figures it out and comes back around just a little bit. We don't even need a ton from Bregman. We just need a little bit more than 150, right? Mm-hmm. And so if all of that comes together with some of these other pieces that we have, man, this team's going to look really, really interesting heading into the playoffs.
Yeah,
and a scary team that other teams are not going to want to face in the playoffs.
Yeah, this team this year feels very much like the pandemic team.
Yeah.
That, you know, through 60 games, it was kind of a miracle that they made the playoffs, that they had the extra extended playoffs. But look what happened when they got in. It didn't matter. They went to Game 7 of the ALCS against the Rays. Like, they were on the cusp of going to the World Series again. And, yeah, they didn't get there, but they turned it on in the playoffs at the right time. And if the Astros get to the playoffs, that to me is where the difference between a team like the Angels and the Rangers versus the Astros always will be, is that the Rangers have no experience. They have a handful of guys with real playoff experience. Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, but, like, I mean, Jacob deGrom's now out for the year. Like, they don't have guys that have, like, real deep. They have Eovaldi.
Right.
Like, but the Astros know Eovaldi pretty good in the playoffs. Like, they know what he's capable of. The Astros still, if they get in the playoffs, are, to me, the most feared team in the American League. Because at that point, you think, Urquidy's back.
Yep.
They've added pieces at the deadline. Alvarez is healthy. Altuve's turned it around. Like, they'll be fine. But specifically on Altuve, just for a minute, like, I will say, like, there, I have some concerns. I'm not, like, full panic. Altuve's done. But there were moments last year where Altuve didn't look great. No RBIs, no home runs in the playoffs.
Right.
Hurts you. The fact that
from your biggest player,
the Astros won the World Series last year without Jose Altuve getting an RBI.
That's wild.
Like, he didn't contribute, like, really in that way. Now, part of it's the bottom of the order was so bad, so there's not really guys on base. But, like, the Astros will rise, and I think the Rangers and the Angels will fall. It's just, when is it all going to come together? And really, that's where, like, the math of just, like, this season is challenging, because it's, how do you add at the deadline? How do you add a bat? How do you add a starter when in reality, like, you just don't know what you don't know, because you don't know what Brantley is. You don't know if you need to replace Jose Abreu. I don't think you do. I think he's shown enough life to where you can acquire a left fielder that can play left and first, and, like, you're good to go.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. I think if they add a bat, that's the only bat that they need to add. I'd be totally fine with them adding a starter. But I do, like I said, I'm not in panic mode with any – make the moves that make the most sense for the team of where you think they're going to be if everybody is healthy. And if it looks like people are trending towards the not healthy direction, then move in that direction, make some changes, and make adjustments if you need to. But I think this team's in a really good spot. Could it be in a better spot? Did we hope it was going to be in a better spot? Yeah, absolutely. But you can only deal with one problem at a time. And right now, I think adding that extra bat just to have that insurance, because you don't know what Brantley is, because you don't know how long Yordan's going to be out. What is supposed to be end of July was when they were shooting for his return. And then what is he going to look like? Is the oblique going to be okay? Adding in that extra arm, I think, would be great for this team. But I don't think they need to make any panic moves, especially with Jose Abreu, because I agree with you. I think he has shown enough life. What was it? I think it was after Wednesday night's game. He had five multi-hit games in the past, in that seven game stretch. That's wild. The home run that he hit on Wednesday night was incredible. The back-to-back home runs by him and Diaz were awesome. I think Diaz is definitely a bat that's shown you, hey, he can be a DH in spots.
Yeah, Diaz is an interesting one.
He's very interesting.
Because his numbers versus lefties are brutal. And he is, I can't remember if he had runners in scoring position last night, so the stat might not be 110% accurate. But going into last night's game, Yadier Diaz was 2-for-23 with runners in scoring position. That's tough, man.
Yeah.
Like, that is, that's tough. Now, if you play him more, I think that might solve some of those problems. Like, the thing with Yordan Alvarez being out that's kind of surprised me is the perfect lineup is really simple. Dubon and Diaz just both need to be in the lineup.
Yeah.
Whether they're in, you know, Dubon's in left. We've seen that a couple times. Diaz is your DH, or Diaz at first and Abreu as your DH. Like, there's a way to, like, put this lineup together in the most efficient way possible. Dusty's giving these guys the extra rest days. I get all that. But I was hoping to see Yadier Diaz more.
Yeah,
because I was hoping to see him have more opportunities with guys on base to figure, okay, when there's guys on base, they're throwing Diaz XYZ, and he's not used to seeing that. He crushes fastballs. Like, where are the holes in his swing? Like, what can we change about his approach to make that better? And the Astros just aren't really giving him that opportunity on a consistent basis, because when he gets a hold of one, that thing, whew,
it's a rocket.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
He's awesome. Like, I thought he was going to catch more. He's not really. Like, it's not, you know, it's the Astros. It's really weird. It feels like they are a below average baseball team right now, but their record doesn't really indicate that.
No.
They're 3.5 games out of their division.
It feels like that's us. They're below average for us right
they
now.
They are. I mean, look, just being like Willie in here is talking about how their ERA is lower at this point than it was last year. Yes, their pitching has been incredible. The fact, and we're going to talk about JP France in the next segment, but JP France, Belak, Ronel Blanco, like, those guys are holding it down. Like, they're not great, all of them. JP France has been really special, I think. The bullpen, even though it's been shaky at times, like, it's still really coming through in the clutch pretty often. The bullpen's there. Pitching to me right now isn't the main concern.
No.
It's the offense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially all of the guys, everybody that you just mentioned, all the guys that you just mentioned, especially Belak and JP France, they'll have like 5-6 amazing innings. And their biggest holes is they just have one inning every game where they just fall apart. And if they could solve that, I think it's, especially with JP France, I think it's a mental thing. But if they could just solve that mentally and solve those one innings that they keep giving up, or at least try to curb the number of runs that they're giving up and not fall apart completely, it's going to make this pitching staff even better. But
yeah,
Sometimes it be like that.
Oh, Josh. He's Josh Beard. You can find him on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio. I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. JP France, he did something that hasn't been done for the Astros since 2007. We'll let you know what that is. But also, so like, how are you feeling about JP France? Because he's solid. We'll talk about it next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'm an idea man, Chuck.
This is Bill. Idea to eliminate garbage. Edible paper.
Contact Tax Relief Helpers for details and restrictions.
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George and Josh Beard here with you till 2 o'clock today. Josh Shebby behind the glass as usual. You guys can get in here on 713-780-3776 on how you're feeling about the Astros offense right now. Bullpen, yeah, it's not been great the last couple days, but overall, it's been really good this season. JP France, another good performance last night. He had his third straight quality start. The last rookie to do that was Chris Sampson for the Astros. He had five straight in 2007. So, JP, look, a quality start's not the end-all, be-all. I know we all loved it when Fromber was getting like 25 straight last year, but JP France has really pitched really well this season. Of the three, Blanco, Bielak, and France, he's been the most impressive. And I think he could be a guy that, you know, we think Lance McCullers is going to be back next year.
I'm tired. I'm tired of saying that. I love Lance. Yeah. I really do. And I wear my Bury Me in the H t-shirt all the time. And I'll always love Lance. And he'll always be a part of the city. He'll always be a big part of the Astros. For the amount of output he has had as a player, I think it's pretty phenomenal how much of the heart and soul of this team and the city he has been at times. And I'll always love him. But I'm so that there's nothing more frustrating to me than saying, will we have Lance back next year? I just can't. I think at this point, I think I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm not even going to think about Lance McCullers. And if they get him back at some point, awesome. Silver lining.
Next year, you have to go into the season with a 5-man rotation that does not include Lance McCullers or Luis Garcia.
Correct.
Which means at some point, in theory, you have a rotation that could have 7-8 guys, and then you're having to figure out who's going down to the minors, who's in the bullpen. But that's where I think a guy like JP France has quickly emerged as someone that helps fill that gap already for next year. Because they said they will reevaluate Lance in November, and then the throwing program and everything would really start in January, which would put him on pace to start the season, like next year. Luis Garcia, the messaging was he'll be back at some point in 2024. He's coming off Tommy John. He's pitched a ton of innings. I think he's an all-star break guy next year. So while you have problems now, you also have problems in the future.
Yeah.
And JP France helps solve some of them. But it's also why I think, like, when we really talk about the deadline at 1 o'clock, I think they should be looking at a pitcher with controllable years.
Yes.
Not just Reynolds. Like, if you can give up a little bit more from your farm system, from maybe guys that are a little bit on the roster now that you felt like you could potentially move on from, I think it is important to add someone. Because you don't know what Jose Urquidy is going to be like. They pushed back Hunter Brown's start because they want to watch his innings. He only threw 126 innings last year. He's thrown 75 already this year. So he's going to blow past that by a million miles. And what happens when Hunter Brown is at 160, 170 innings,
yep,
and you're in the playoffs and you're trying to win another World Series, you don't know what his stuff's going to look like. So, like, while, like, you think he's awesome, now it's a fair thing to believe that his arm will tire at some point this year. And, like, you have to proactively face that. And that's what they're doing by pushing back his start to Monday, is just giving him, like, that little bit of extra rest. And I think that's what they're going to do with him specifically, is that Blanco is going to be a bullpen and a starter, and he's going to kind of mix and match. That when they want to give Hunter Brown that extra day, they will. But for the most part, you'll have a 5-man rotation sprinkled in a sixth occasionally.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for me, I would just love to have somebody that's kind of in that rotation between Hunter and JP France.
Yeah.
Like, I love what JP France and Brandon Bielak have done. Don't get me wrong, but if we could have a guy that fits in there in between that after those Hunter Brown starts,
And then we get a JP France game, and Hunter and Bielak has like a little bit of a chance to kind of rest a little bit more, settle down a little bit more. I'd love to see that. The problem is I think the market for starting pitching on the trade market is going to be – the demand is going to be high.
Yeah.
And there are not a lot of guys on the trade market that you can go out and get, especially that are at that specific level. And so the Astros clearly are going to be one of the top teams that are looking for somebody. And I know that the ERAs are low. Everybody's doing great. I wish the bats would help Fromber out a little bit more, because it's wild looking at his 6-5 record and then look at how he's been pitching all year and try to justify that. Like, it's weird because he's not pitching like a 6-5 record. It's wild.
The new playoff rules, it complicates things. You have a team, you know, Jeremy, Joel, and I have talked a lot about Marcus Stroman and Cody Bellinger for the Astros. Like, how both those guys could be a good fit. You have an elite starter. Maybe not elite is probably too strong of a word, but like, you have a very good starter in Marcus Stroman. And you have a guy, a lefty bat, who could play left field and first base, and Cody Bellinger. That, like, he solves a lot of your other potential issues if Michael Brantley doesn't return.
Right.
But the Cubs are below 500, but that division sucks. So it's like, are they going to buy? Are they going to sell? I was watching Jesse Rogers, who covers him for ESPN Chicago with Mad Dog on the MLB Network. And he's like, it could depend on that last week. If they lose 3 out of 5 games going into August 1st and deadline, they might sell. If they win 4 out of 5 and they're within 3 games of the Pirates or the Reds, they might buy.
Yeah.
Like, or they could do what the Mariners did a couple years ago when they traded away Kendall Graveman. After the Mariners traded Graveman, they then bought other pieces. So, like, you don't know who's available is the point. It is not easy to figure out who's going to buy, who's going to sell with the expanded rules in baseball, because it all really might come down to like that last week.
I think there's a couple of teams that are really interesting to look at whenever you talk about, you don't know whether they're going to buy or sell. The Red Sox all season have been one of those teams for me where they just went out and beat the Yankees last night. What was it, like 15-5, 15-6 or something like that? And they've had these games where they've had these stretches where they've won some games. They look pretty good. But to me, going towards the end, the back stretch of the season, I don't think they have enough. And I'm wondering if they're a team that's going to be a seller and start selling some of these other players. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would look at. I'd look at teams like that who are teetering on the cusp of should we buy, should we sell, and try to offer them some kind of a deal where it's like, hey, why don't you trade this player to us? And we're going to give you something that you can use right now, because they've got a young core. That's the biggest thing with them. And I would like to look at some of those other teams to add that bat where you could add more of a guy that can move around to a couple of different spots and be a utility guy. Like, I don't know. This is a name that I've thought about a lot, but Kike Hernandez is one that I think would be really interesting, where there's been rumors that Boston might be willing to move him. Now, do you have too much utility there with Dubon and Kike Hernandez? And is that the right bat that you want to add? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that's another guy that you could add into this lineup that could help out a lot in a lot of different spots. And for me, at this point, if you're looking to add a guy into the lineup and onto this team, and you're looking to add a bat, I feel like versatility is the best thing that you can have, because then that allows you to maneuver the lineup a little bit more, where you can fit in the guys like Diaz and Jolks and those guys a little bit more.
Yeah, I think in terms of like the lineup, it's all about Brantley. It starts and ends there. If Brantley's back, you're adding a depth piece. You're adding another guy that can help play every 5 days. Like, you're not talking about someone that's a high impact player. You guys can drop in your questions on the text line 713-780-3776, or on the Twitch, of course, as well. We got one here from Willie, and we'll answer any questions you guys got for us. We're gonna go all over the place right now. Who pitches more for the Astros in the next 2 years, Lance McCullers or Luis Garcia? It's Luis Garcia.
It's Luis Garcia. Like, I, in my mind right now, I just have it built up in my head that Lance McCullers is never going to pitch for the Astros ever again.
I would love to say you're an idiot, but I can't, because this injury, like, I'm on the field at U.S. Cellular when the umpires come over and tell us the White Sox versus the Astros ALDS game is canceled. I was there covering the game.
Right.
And then we found out a couple minutes later they were moving Lance up a day. And then when they put out this injury release, they reference that game
yep.
from I said 2019, 2021.
2021, yeah.
That series in the ALDS versus the White Sox, when they moved Lance up a day because of the rainout, he got hurt in that game, and he still hasn't fully recovered from that moment.
For years.
It's lingered. And now they're getting rid of a bone spur, like he re-aggravated it. He didn't have his best stuff last year. I think the answer is Luis Garcia, because we see people all the time come back from Tommy John. Like, all the time.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't Tommy John. Now, is it best case scenario for Lance McCullers? Absolutely, because we were thinking it could have been Tommy John again for him. It's not. He could be there for opening day. Other question we got in here from the text line. You were waiting to send this one. it came in at 3 minutes into the show. Joe George, how long is the honeymoon for Cubs fans winning the World Series after over a 100-year drought? And would you trade Astros last 10 years for Cubs last 10 with everything that went on? Yeah, honeymoon lives forever. David Ross, I can't wait till he gets fired because he deserves it. Would I trade the Astros last 10 years or the Cubs last 10 years for the Astros, including the sign-stealing scandal? Yes.
Yeah.
Duh.
That's a no-brainer.
My favorite baseball player, one of my favorite baseball players of all time is Sammy Sosa. He's a cheater. Like, I was raised on a cheater.
Yeah.
Like, who's your favorite baseball player? I don't know. A guy who's like different shades of pink right now and took a lot of steroids.
Yeah, I would love to get serious answers, like truth serum type stuff. Go
from
to other
any fan base.
From other fan bases of these teams who have these poverty franchises, and be like, would you trade your team's last 10 years for the Astros' last 10 years of success in a heartbeat? Like, it's not even no question.
Yes.
Yeah, and then I do like the guys who did it at Disney World, and I go to Disney World. If somebody banged a trash can, I'd be like, fastball. And just turn it into a huge joke.
100%. All right. Mandatory minicamp is over for the Texans. It's now officially back to an offseason break. One of C.J. Stroud's newest wide receivers threw out an interesting comparison for C.J. and what it means for his future as the Texans. And if it's good enough for Josh and I. We talk about it next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. Time to wake up.
Hey, you. You're finally awake. You were trying to cross the border, right?
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Rolling on the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right, so mandatory minicamp is over. Lots of nonsense. We got Stutzervations on sportsmap.com. Cody Stutz's 11 observations from minicamp. You guys can read that. But one of the things that came out from the last couple of days is Noah Brown, who is, I don't know, like the fifth or sixth guy.
Yeah.
I think at this point, you know, maybe if Mechie's not back quite yet or wherever he's at in his development, Tank Dell, Noah Brown could be a little bit more of a factor. I thought there was moments last year actually where he was pretty solid in Dallas. But he directly says he sees comparisons between C.J. Stroud and Dak Prescott, his former quarterback. And it's really interesting because my first reaction is, well, that sucks. But when you look at Dak's numbers, and as long as CJ doesn't have the exact same flaws as Dak's game, it could be a very good thing.
Yeah.
Because Dak, productivity-wise, is like where you would want CJ Stroud to be. I think that's very fair. When you get to like QB 8 through like 13 or so, there's an argument that Dak Prescott could be as high as 8, low as 13. Like, he is in that range of a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. It's just going to depend on which person you listen to and like what their takes are.
Yeah.
But like, everyone's going to kind of be, Dak has a wide range of belief. But is that good enough?
This is why I'm going to say yes. And because the way I'm reading Noah Brown's quote about the comparisons between CJ Stroud and Dak Prescott, I think it was specifically when it comes down to leadership and how he's maneuvering the offense. So I if it's just straight up down to decision making after the ball is snapped, I've got questions. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about Dak Prescott, the leader, if we're talking about Dak Prescott, the offensive mind,
sure,
we can see Dak Prescott is one of the best pre-snap quarterbacks in the NFL. He does a great job of reading the defense. He does a great job of getting his offenses into the right plays. Now, does he always make the best decision, or is he the most accurate after the ball is snapped? No. But pre-snap, he's really, really, really good. Multiple people around the NFL have said he's one of the best at it. And if that's what Noah Brown's talking about, if he's talking about it from like a leadership standpoint and
that's good,
a recognizing defensive standpoint and hard work and being the guy that comes in, he's there before everybody every day. He's talking to these guys. He's telling them where they need to go, what they need to do. And he's taking that responsibility on himself. I am so excited about this.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. If the Texans were the Washington Commanders and you told me that CJ Stroud was Dak Prescott, I go, great.
Yeah.
Like, the Texans could go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
In the AFC, where you are, Dak ain't good enough. And that's not necessarily a reflection of CJ, of where it's a bad thing. It's just the reality of, like, the world we live in as watching a team that plays in the AFC. Like, if Dak Prescott was the quarterback for the Texans, you would not be in 2 or 3 years picking them to dethrone Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Trevor Lawrence, like all these young guns that are in the AFC. Dak's like skill level may not be good enough. But where it's okay, go ahead.
The one thing that we could say about CJ Stroud, at least from what we know, from the operable data that we have of him playing football, is after the ball is snapped, I think that CJ Stroud is a better quarterback than Dak Prescott is. He has a stronger arm. He's more accurate. And the one question about him... The one question about him at Ohio State and going into the draft and now going into the NFL is, can he fix some of the decision-making issues?
So is he intelligent?
Frankly? Well, I know he had the test that he scored low on, whatever. I think I've watched a lot of his tape. I watched a lot of his film. I can't tell you how many times I've watched that Georgia game. He looks so good. And I think that from a physicality standpoint, what he needs to have is from a physical standpoint as a quarterback, he has that over Dak Prescott. And if he is Dak Prescott the leader, if he's Dak Prescott the guy, the leader of the team, totally on board with it. But I do have issues. If he's Dak Prescott the player,
but at the same time, like we're gonna contradict ourselves a little bit here, because at the same time, if you told the Texans fan, your quarterback is gonna complete 68.8% of their passes, throw for 4,449 yards, throw 37 touchdowns and 10 picks, and have a 104.2 QB rating. Those were his stats in 2021. In 2019, the year before he broke his leg, he threw for 4,902 yards, 30 touchdowns, 11 picks, 99.7 QB rating. So the season before and the season after, I think I have my timeline right, when he broke his leg, he's a really good quarterback. And if that's what CJ Stroud is, awesome. Like, Dak's rookie year, he threw 23 touchdowns and 4 picks and threw for 3,600 yards. Had his highest QBR his rookie year. If CJ Stroud did that this year, he would break multiple Texans records.
Yeah.
He would be, like, everyone would be freaking out if he did that from day one. Obviously, there's a big talent gap between the Cowboys of Dak's first year and what CJ has.
Right.
Like, statistically, it's more like, as long as he doesn't have some of the clutch stuff.
Yes.
It's the end of game with CJ
maybe,
that, like, needs to be better.
Yeah, maybe don't slide out the clock at the end of a playoff game. Like,
yeah,
as long as CJ Stroud doesn't throw an interception with, like, 3 seconds left on the clock and he didn't need to and they were ahead and then it's a pick six, probably don't do that either.
Yeah. So there's moments where I'm like, okay, if he's Dak Prescott, it can work.
Right.
And, like, it's funny. If we have this conversation in a year, I think it's going to be very different, because I think Dak's going to take a big step back this year. I think the Cowboys are, just in general, because I think Mike McCarthy's a terrible play caller.
Yep.
And they made a really bad decision. And by letting him stay on as head coach and letting him stay on as OC when they've been wanting Sean Payton for, like, 10 years, Jerry Jones has, and they could have gotten him. And they didn't do that. Like, they didn't even try. Like, they didn't even fire McCarthy to do it. But, like, when Ben Johnson, the Lions OC, is the Cowboys head coach in 2024, Like, that's going to be a good thing for Dak.
Yeah, it's wild to me because I just automatically assumed when we knew Peyton was coming back, I was like, he's going to be the Cowboys head coach. And I was like, Mike McCarthy should be gone.
100%.
He's definitively going to be gone now, and Sean Payton's going to be the head coach. And the fact – Mike McCarthy must be the best yes man that Jerry Jones has ever had, which is saying something because he's had a lot of really good yes men.
Yeah. I wonder if part of it is like behind-the-scenes conversations with Sean Payton, that Sean Payton's going to say, like, I'm going to do it my way. I mean, look at Dak. I mean, with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson gets traded to Denver. He gets his own office. He gets to bring in his own quarterback coach. He gets all this, like, special treatment that the Broncos organization is just like, we're going to give you all of this. And the first thing Sean Payton says is all of that's gone.
Yeah.
You don't get your own office. You're with everyone else. You don't get your own trainers. We have ours. Like, changes everything immediately.
Right.
Well, that's the new ownership group in Denver. They're more likely to listen to Sean Payton than Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones hasn't really accomplished anything in the last 30 years, but he still is Jerry Jones.
Speaking of honeymoons, my God, championship honeymoons, Jerry Jones is going to last forever until he's no longer the owner of the team.
I don't really feel like they I don't really feel like they – what is the honeymoon for Jerry Jones? Do people care?
No. The honeymoon is the championships that he won in the 90s. Nobody cares except for him. He still looks at this team and his decision-making as the decision-making that led to those Super Bowl wins in the 90s. But it wasn't even his decision-making that led to that. But he's still going to live on that, and he's still going to pretend like all the decisions that he makes lead to that. Newsflash, Mike McCarthy, the Packers and Aaron Rodgers won a Super Bowl in spite of Mike McCarthy, not because of Mike McCarthy.
100%.
And it's not going to happen. Like, I agree with you. I think Dak and the Cowboys take a massive step back this year. I do like their offense a little bit more, like, weapon-wise, what they have.
Sure.
Obviously, adding Brandon Cooks to that receiving core was pretty big, but they lost Dalton Schultz, and now they've got some young guys at tight end. But, yeah, Mike McCarthy is just not good.
Just really quick here before we go to break, what do you think is the – what's the player in the NFL ceiling for CJ? Is Dak the ceiling statistically?
No, I don't – well, statistically
– like, can he go – can he be much more – I think it's – like, could he be Joe Burrow? I don't think so.
I need to see it. I right now, I think statistically, yes, Dak is his ceiling.
Yeah.
I have to put it there because what would change his ceiling is he a charismatic enough guy and a good enough leader and a good enough quarterback to make everybody around him better? So essentially, is he Burrow, Allen, or Mahomes? And those guys just, they felt different whenever you saw them play for the first time. It felt different watching Mahomes play. It felt different. Well, obviously, it took Josh Allen a little bit longer because he had his rookie year. He's not great.
Yeah.
But he had a turnaround. Joe Burrow got hurt in his rookie year, but we kind of saw some flashes during his rookie season where you're like, oh, man, this guy's going to be good. But they were all just a little bit different. I got to see it from Stroud because as of right now, I'd say Dak is his ceiling.
Yeah, I think Dak is a pretty solid, like, ceiling at this moment. Like, if you take a quarterback at number two and, like, you get Dak Prescott, is it perfect? No. Do you always want more? Yes. But, like, honestly, in reality.
What's his floor? What do you think his floor is right now? Because I don't think his floor is as low as somebody like Anthony Richardson. Like, Anthony Richardson is obviously much lower floor.
Baker?
You think Baker? Oh, that's a low floor.
I think Baker, because of his personality, has kind of got unfairly treated.
That's fair.
Like, but there's a reason why he was called to L.A. There's a reason why he'll be the starter in Tampa. Like, he's not a great quarterback. But, like, he's probably going to play for a much longer time and just go from team to team. Maybe Tannehill.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Tannehill.
So, like, Dak versus Tannehill. Okay. Yeah. I mean, Tannehill's had more playoff success than Dak. So
it took him a while to get good.
Yeah,
it did. And then his window of being a quote good quarterback was very small.
All right. He's Josh Beard. I'm Joe George. Josh Chevy behind the glass. We are just, math is hard, 5, maybe 6 days away from the NBA draft. It's Thursday night. What will the Rockets do at 4? Will they surprise us? What are our gut feelings? We got them for you next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You've chosen wisely.
Hell yeah.
the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, the NBA draft is just a couple days away. Thursday night, the Rockets will be on the clock with the fourth selection. We know Victor Wembanyama is going to go number one to the Spurs. Even though Michael Jordan is selling his team for billions of dollars, he is reportedly meeting with Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson. Just good timing, I guess. Well, little NBA update here. Josh, I know. I hope you're doing okay, Josh Chevy. I hope you're doing okay.
He's not doing okay.
Well, Bradley, would Bradley Beal make you feel better?
That would certainly help.
Good, because Washington is in serious talks with two finalists, Miami and Phoenix, for a Bradley Beal trade.
Phoenix, not Milwaukee, huh?
So Phoenix, so I guess my guess is, what, are they going to get Chris Paul?
Yeah.
Paul is like, he's just dumped for like the players that no one wants. Can you imagine Chris Paul and like Kristaps Porzingis rolling out in Washington next year? That's tough. Look.
That'd be a good team. I'd love to watch that.
They'll
team.
Buy out Chris Paul immediately. But my guess is like that would be interesting. Bradley Beal seems like he'll finally be traded this offseason. Now it sounds like he might be traded before Thursday, before the draft.
That's so frustrating. Like,
that'd be interesting.
I still think I want Damian Lillard a little bit more, though, but I could settle for Beal.
I was listening to Woj was on Ryan Russillo's podcast, and they were talking about this very thing of Bradley Beal and then Damian Lillard. And Woj was like, they're not talking about trading Dame.
No.
He's not asking. They're not, like, pushing. Like, there's still some belief that, like, for some reason, like, they think they're going to win.
That the Portland thinks they're still going to win with Dame?
Nah. Like, I think Dame and Portland are all delusional.
Yeah, they have to be. I mean, look, you should be. If you're somebody that's building a team, you should be delusional. Not to the point to where you're not going to make the right moves to make the team better, but you should always delusionally believe, hey, we can win with what we have if
Damian,
we make some.
But Damian Lillard at some point, like, he's a depreciating asset.
Yes.
And, like, you have to move on from him at some point. Or eventually you're going to get absolutely nothing from him, and you're going to be paying to get rid of him. Like, it's more likely at this point, my gut tells me, that when they eventually trade him, it's going to be more like the Rockets, how they got rid of Chris Paul. Like, they're going to be attaching assets to Damian Lillard to get a player in return if they don't move on him quickly.
Right.
Because, like, they should have moved him years ago, honestly.
I
love that he wants to stay there.
Yes.
I appreciate that. I wish more NBA players were like Damian Lillard. Like, I hope if Jalen Green becomes a superstar, that even if you bring in James Harden and piss him off, that, like, one day, like, he wants to stay. Like,
it
would just be better for the sport if more guys were like Dame. But also at some point, like, if I'm Dame, it's like, first of all, what's so great about Portland?
The food? Voodoo Donuts? Come on, dude. Voodoo Donuts is great.
Don't we have Voodoo Donuts here?
It's not. It's different. No, it's different. It's different. It's the original Voodoo Donuts.
Oh.
Come on, okay. Man. No, I don't fully disagree with you. I think that, especially, it's crazy to see Dame want to stay in Portland in today's NBA environment where a lot of people are moving around and trying to team up with other players. So I think there is a point where it's kind of cool to see one guy who wants to stick around. But also, like, you have to be realistic. Portland has – look, I understand from Portland's standpoint, you have one of the best players in the NBA. You have one of the best scorers in the NBA. They just needed to do a better job of building around him. Damian Lillard should have looked and seen, these guys don't know how to build around me.
Well, they're building
and they're
young.
Yeah, they are, which makes no sense whenever you have a guy like Damian Lillard. So I get it. I do agree that if I'm the Heat, I would much rather – the Heat or the Suns, I would rather have Damian Lillard over Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
But I was actually talking with somebody last night who's a Heat fan, and we were talking about the Bradley Beal situation. And he told me that he's like, well, they want to trade Tyler Hero and maybe Duncan Robinson for Bradley Beal, and I wouldn't do that. You'll never guess who I was talking to, one of my family members.
Yeah, but remember when they all said that about James Harden?
Yeah. Yeah, it's – I get it. But, I like
Tyler Hero.
I do like Tyler Hero, but Bradley Beal is a better player, a much better player than Tyler Hero. He's a much better player than Duncan Robinson. And the fear would be you're losing some three point shooting from those guys.
Sure,
Bradley Beal still shoots at a fairly high level. He's had like one off season out of the last like 6 years, but historically, I think career wise, he's like 37% from three.
Yeah,
I think he's shot upwards of 39 to 40% at times. Could he be a spot shooter? That's gonna be, we'd have to see that. I would love Bradley Beal, or I'd love to see Bradley Beal in Miami. I think it'd be a lot of fun to watch, and that might be the piece that really tips them over the
Phoenix
edge.
Would be interesting, like the idea of Booker, Beal, and Durant being on the court at the same time.
There's not enough, but they need two balls on the court for that.
Yeah, I mean, they would figure it out. Like, KD is, I mean, for how great he is, he's a pretty selfless basketball player, to be honest. I mean, the fact
that
he willingly teamed up with James Harden and Kyrie Irving shows that, like, he doesn't need the ball 24/7. But so Thursday night, so Wembanyama's going one.
Yep.
Michael Jordan, even though he's selling the Hornets, is meeting with Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller. So apparently he's going to make one last bad draft pick before he walks out the door, because, like, that's what Michael does. And then it seems like Portland's kind of whoever's left if they keep it. But we've got reports that Charlotte and Portland have talked to the Pelicans, and the Pelicans are seriously, for the first time, considering trading Zion. Like, could you see Zion be traded for the number 3 pick to go join Dame Lillard in Portland? I could see it. I don't know if I totally buy it, but I could see it.
I'm pretty sure that I read that Charlotte actually has more interest for Brandon Ingram more than Zion.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, Ingram would be really interesting with LaMelo. Like, that'd be crazy if the Pelicans blew it up. They were the number 1 seed when everyone was healthy in December.
Yeah.
But then you have the Rockets at 4. And it seems we're like the reports that Zion could be traded for the second or the third pick. I think there's a reason why it's not like he could also be traded for the fourth pick, because there's a clear drop off.
Yeah.
To like that next player, like whether it's one of the Thompson twins, maybe it's Jairus Walker. I have no idea what the Rockets are going to do. I think it's going to be one of the Thompson twins, to be honest, if they keep the pick. And the only way they move it is if somehow this Jaylen Brown deal were to come together by Thursday, and I don't think that's going to happen either.
Yeah, I look, if I'm any team that's picking in the top 4, I'm just not touching anything surrounding Zion Williamson. I have no faith that he's going to become the player that we all thought he was going to be when coming into the NBA. I remember watching him, sitting with my brother watching him, and we were just watching him in college going, like, this guy is going to be just something different that we've never seen in the NBA before, outside of maybe LeBron. But he's even bigger and he's even stronger, and it's wild to watch him play. And I have no faith that he can put it together up top to actually have the career we thought he could have. So I'm not touching him if I have one of those top picks. The Rockets, man, I honestly like Walker. I think Walker could be really interesting for him. I've seen NBA comps of Paul Millsap for him.
Yeah.
And Paul Millsap is a guy that I felt like just all throughout his career continued to be one of the more underrated players, who just constantly was really good, great rebounder, good defender, spread the floor.
Like, let's just change the names. With the fourth pick in the 2023 NBA draft, Houston Rockets,
like, Paul Millsap. Yeah. the another guy, like, that...
But the thing is, Josh, is I don't disagree with you.
He'd be great for them.
I liked Paul Millsap, but, like, the idea that, like, he could be Paul Millsap and that's what you're taking with the fourth pick, that's why I think it's one of the Thompson twins.
Yeah.
Because, like, their ceiling is not going to be Paul Millsap. Their floor might be, like, early Laker Lonzo Ball, because their jump shot is, like, real broke, especially Amen. But, like, I don't know.
That's
hard Thursday night. I have no idea.
That's honestly why I'm on the opposite end. Look, we've got guys that are producing. We've got guys who are trying to hit their ceiling. We've got Jalen Green, right? We've got all of these dudes that are going to be incredible. Why not bring in a guy like that's just going to be solid for you?
You're thinking role player.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Or just your fourth guy. Cam Whitmore is another guy that I'm really interested in too.
Yeah, Cam Whitmore, I know he's been kind of making some of the rounds locally too with interviews. I know there's some people have talked about, I think we were talking about the Killer Bees, about the Rockets trading 4-20 to the Magic for 6-11. Like maybe trading back, and like that's when he comes in. Grady Dick is a guy that's been talked about. I think the Rockets, honestly, it's so funny. It's just like the Texans draft. Like going into the NFL draft round 1, I was prepared for anything except for what actually happened. Even though Daniel Jeremiah said that he predicted in his final mock the Texans would trade up for number 3 and get 2 and 3 and walk away with Stroud and Anderson, I'm prepared for anything Thursday night.
Yeah.
I'm prepared for them to keep it. I'm prepared for them to trade up, trade back, trade it for a player. Like, I think everything is on the table because of how severe the drop off is from the top three players to the next guy.
My sneaky fun prediction is that the Rockets take one of the Thompson twins, and then the Mavericks take the other Thompson twin at 10, and then they have to play against each other in the division. That'd be awesome.
They don't play in the same division.
The Rockets and the Mavericks?
Oh, I think you said the Magic.
No, not the Magic. The Mavericks at 10. Yeah. That's Mavericks.
That bum franchise going to run Luka Doncic out of town in the next 2 years. All right, he's Josh Beard. I'm Joe George. The Astros and the trade deadline. Deadline's only 6 weeks away. What's their biggest need? Or maybe they need a bunch of things. We'll talk about it next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. Oh, no. Why are the brakes out?